Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Chiefs time! Sometimes I feel like we do an hour of this show where we talk about the Royals being dysfunctional or just bad, and it's sort of like it's kind of like eating your vegetables before you can have your dessert, and I don't want to have the dessert at 9 a.m. because that'll make me sick, but having dessert at 10 a.m. sort of feels better. I think that analogy works. I actually really enjoyed the Royals talk we had today. It just made me sad. So now I'm going to give you some things to be optimistic about as far as the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, if you are a lifelong Chiefs fan like I am, you're saying, excuse me? Optimism with this franchise? The team that just fired its GM and then hired another guy that came out of... Holy cow, I just realized also that we haven't talked about Brett Veach on this show. That happened this week. I filled in on What's on Tap the day after it happened. So if you haven't heard me talk about Brett Veach at all, you can go over to my Twitter account or you can search the Roughing the Kicker iTunes feed, Blog Talk Radio feed. It's got all of the Chiefs. Every time I talk to Chiefs, I put it up on that feed. So that's where the What's on Tap, you can find that What's on Tap show where it's basically all about Brett Veach. Just Google Roughing the Kicker Chiefs or something like that. Because I wasn't even planning. I just realized we haven't talked about Brett Veach on this show. And there is still like a huge amount of Royals. Excuse me. Dirty word. A huge amount of Chiefs to talk about today. We'll talk to Seth Kaiser a little bit later on also about a whole lot of this stuff and more. But I want to start with Patrick Mahomes because all across sports during All-Star break week, you invent stories. Like there was some national talk about like how Richard Sherman says the NFL needs to strike to get better contracts. And every once in a while something comes like this is a good time for Colin Kaepernick to come up, but he hasn't really because we've all kind of we've used that as a filler for a while. Talked about NBA contracts and Aaron Judge, is he the best slugger in baseball already? Is he a top 10 all-time power hitter? Like that's kind of what happens nationally during the All-Star break. It's just sort of a dark time for sports talk because there's not a whole lot going on. Well, in Kansas City, I think we decided collectively somehow that Patrick Mahomes starting soon was going to be our All-Star break topic. Having the discussion of is this something that is or is not feasible? Because nothing changed this week. No one said or did anything this week that changed how Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes' dynamic is functioning or what direction we think the Chiefs are going to be going in with those two guys. None of that was impacted by anything newsworthy this week. However, it became the topic of conversation, which I'm thrilled for because I love this topic of conversation. And as I have done my own talking about Mahomes, as I have listened to other people talk about Mahomes and seen people sort of shifting around and everything, I've found myself in a place that's kind of uncomfortable. Because I don't want to sound like some sort of Chiefs talking demigod know-it-all who lives on a higher plane than people who in reality definitely know more about sports and sports talk radio than I do. I don't mind feeling that way. I don't want to sound that way. That's gross. I don't want to sound like I'm talking down to the universe. But at the same time, I keep hearing people say things about Patrick Mahomes and about Alex Smith that I simply don't understand the logic behind. And there are a lot of different ways that this goes and a lot of different people that I disagree with. So maybe it's more about my perspective and less about everyone else's. I guess that's probably kind of the Occam's razor of this. Maybe instead of me saying, how are all of these people on this side of the logic when clearly the perspective that I hold is clearly the correct one. Maybe it's because I'm deviating from the norm on it. That's fine. So whatever. I don't really care how that happens, but I've just been sort of surprised because I don't feel like I'm saying anything super crazy. But like one thing was about the salary cap. Like I was running the board for Between the Lines on Friday, and Kevin was talking about how the quarterback position shouldn't factor into your salary cap management like other players do. And I get his point. I understand the thought process behind it. If you're the Packers, he's right. If you're the Packers, you pay Aaron Rodgers, and then you deal with everything else as if that's your actual cap. You pay Aaron Rodgers as much as you have to, and then you build your team with the 100 and whatever million dollars that are left. I'm totally fine with that. But quarterbacks have to get to a certain level to transcend the realities of team management. You do that for Brady and Rodgers and the very tippy top of the league. But I don't know if you do that for Kirk Cousins, much less Alex Smith. Because that's what we were talking about, or what they were talking about on Between the Lines. I was talking to Beards the whole time. Not the whole time, but I was talking to Beards like, wait, I don't understand why I'm thinking this way. But so I started just writing stuff down for today. Because I've thought through it more, and I've written through it more, so I think I'm at a place that makes sense. But if you think I'm wrong, you can always call the show. It's 913-38-10-810. I'm willing to have a back and forth. Because what Kevin was saying was the Chiefs shouldn't be making an economical decision about Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, because you should be, I don't think I said that up very well at all. That was his larger point, was between Smith and Mahomes, you just play the better quarterback and you worry about the cap with every other position. But I just don't think that's how the NFL works. And I also don't think that Alex Smith is at a place where he's beyond practical cap management. In a larger sense, I've been beating this drum since January. The only way to win in the NFL, especially in the AFC, is to have an elite quarterback or a valuable one. I've said over and over and over and over again since like 2004 or something, every AFC quarterback has been Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger, or the 1 year Joe Flacco on his rookie deal. So I know it's sort of fun to create like hard and fast rules, like just pay your quarterback and then worry about everything else later. I know that's kind of fun. But it also usually, those kind of hard and fast rules, like in life in general, usually kind of destroy your chance at nuance and the reality of the conversation. This stuff isn't mathematical. There's a lot of gray area in these conversations. So if you look a whole year ahead from now, you can ask yourself, without any hard and fast rules polluting the conversation, what are the Chiefs better off with? Alex Smith, with Patrick Mahomes backing him up, or Patrick Mahomes and $17 million? I don't think Alex Smith is going to be on this team next year. I just don't. I just don't think it's going to happen. Partially because I don't know if I think that Alex Smith should be the quarterback this year. We'll get to that later on. But I can't see Alex Smith being $17 million more valuable than Patrick Mahomes. I just don't. Especially after Mahomes has sat for a year and learned under Andy Reid for a full year, I just don't see how that could possibly be true. And then do we think so highly of Alex Smith that even at his value of $20 million next year, he's untouchable? How? Why? What? Since when? Where? Who? Is that all of them? I think since when was a little bit of a reach, but I got there. And there are a couple of people, I mean, there are a lot of people. I disagreed with a lot of what Kevin was saying. I disagree with a lot of something that Herm Edwards said that we'll get to later on. Herm Edwards and I have never met or spoken. So it's not going to be a problem. But boy, we disagree on a lot from what he told Seren down in Lake Tahoe. But Seren also talked to Joe Theismann about Alex Smith this week. And I think Theismann contradicted himself.
Alex Smith is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Alex Smith will be the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. And at some point, if they have to make an economic decision on Alex,
which could be looming next year.
Which could possibly be next year, because we're looking at numbers 100. You're looking at $25 million. $26 million a year on quarterbacks right now, guys that have a proven record. Mm-hmm. The thing about Kansas City to me that over the last couple of years, which is sort of amazing, 2 years ago, they don't have a wide receiver catch a touchdown pass. Hearing me say it, I don't believe my own ears. Okay? Last year, Alex threw 16 touchdown passes. If the Kansas City Chiefs want to get where they want to go, they're going to have to get the ball in the end zone, throwing the football. And you can't just score 16 touchdown and throw 16 touchdown passes in 16 games. You just can't do it. You can't rely on that one aspect of the game, the defense, to carry you. I think Andy's going to have to give Alex a lot more rein. Let him. Hey, if you make mistakes, you make mistakes.
Did you see what he did there? Well, that just didn't make any sense. First of all, he's not the type of quarterback to just take bigger shots. I don't. At this point, if Andy Reid is still hiding parts of the offense from Alex Smith, then he has to leave. Because you can't have a quarterback for 3 years and then still be trying to hide risky parts of your offense from him. That's insane. That just cannot possibly be happening. And if it is, that's why Alex Smith is on his way out anyway. Because Andy Reid thinks he's limiting the offense. But he brought up the thing that where the Chiefs had no wide receivers catch touchdown, which is a stat that, boy, I got tired of hearing that year. But even now, he said last year, he threw 16 touchdown passes. Actually, I'm wondering if that included Nick Foles. Charlie, can you look that up for me? I think Alex Smith threw 16 touchdowns last year, but find that specifically, please. I want to make sure I get that right, because that stat is worth getting correct. Very few things on this show are worth getting correct. That is worth getting correct. But there's so many things that I just don't understand. First of all, Theismann said, you know, the quarterback market right now, $24, $25, $26 million for a top-shelf quarterback. Alex Smith next year set to make 20. That is not a compliment. That is not a good reason for not getting rid of Alex Smith. Are you kidding? Because with Alex Smith plus Patrick Mahomes' salary next year, you're basically paying him Aaron Rodgers money or Derek Carr money or Kirk Cousins money. And paying Alex Smith $5 million less than the best quarterbacks in football, that is not a good argument for Alex Smith's value. He is not just $5 million of value short of the best quarterbacks in football. How absurd is that? That's just bad logic, honestly. But to say that the team has to... This is where I think Theismann just sort of talked himself in a circle. Was it 16 for just Smith last year? Charlie, what'd you come up with?
Yeah, 16 for just Smith if you include the playoffs.
Great,
and three for Foles.
Right, okay. Cool. Thank you. So that's in 14 games. Well, 15 games with the playoffs. So 15 games. I guess 16 appeared in. 15 started. And 16 thrown touchdowns from Alex Smith. What Joe Theismann did that it really, like, sent off my antennas shooting out of my head is, he said, you can't live a life in the NFL throwing 16 touchdowns a year. Also, Alex Smith at $20 million next year is a pretty good value. What? That doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make sense. There's just not logic to that. Now, in fairness, Theismann's solution to the problem was give Alex Smith the full offense. And if Alex Smith hasn't been given the full offense yet, he's never going to be. If Andy Reid hasn't found Alex Smith to be a capable quarterback in his offense by this point, he's not going to be surprised in week six this year and go, you know what, Alex, now's the time. Now we've got to push this offense. Because last year, the offense simply wasn't good enough. They were an average offense across the board, and they were atrocious in big moments. They blew a couple of games, like that Titans game and the Bucks game were horrendous showings. The Steelers game, obviously, they lost to a bleeping kicker. The offense was average across the board and bad when they needed to be the best. And so somehow, with all of that being said, and with 16 touchdown passes by your quarterback last year, you're going to tell me that only paying him $20 million next year is an economical decision that's justifiable? Are you kidding me? I promise you, that Patrick Mahomes will throw 16 touchdowns in 2018. I promise you. If you were going to, like, bet my life on it, I would like to go ahead and put in the provision about, you know, like, if he breaks his leg or something in the preseason, then I'd like to be able to keep my life. But if you take 15 games of Patrick Mahomes in 2018, he will throw as many touchdown passes as Alex Smith threw last year in 15 games. 15 and a half games, whatever. I mean, that's undeniable. Will he throw more interceptions? Sure. But also, we'll talk to Seth Kizer a little bit about the state of the Chiefs' offense. With all the problems they had last year and everything I just said ringing extremely true, the Chiefs need a different cannon. The Chiefs need a different center of this offense. They did not improve the offense around Alex Smith this year. Maybe Tyreek Hill's development will be so overwhelming that he'll just be DeSean Jackson and everything will be fine. But if Tyreek Hill just progresses a little bit, this offense got worse in the offseason with the same quarterback in the middle. Speaking of Tyreek Hill, Herm Edwards also talking to Seren this week. Herm Edwards mentions Tyreek Hill in a little bit. But first, let's listen to what Herm says about Alex Smith. And man, I just have a really hard time buying into what Herm says here.
Well, and you know, Alex Smith is the type of guy, and he learned early in his career, he's a quarterback willing to take a profit. I'll take the profit. I'll keep the chains moving. Because that's how we function. Because I got a defense over there that's going to give me an extra two possessions probably a game. Because I'm going to take the ball away. Now, what he has to do, he has to get better in situations as far as when they're in the attack mode of, okay, here we are, we're in the red zone. They got a terrific tight end. Okay. We got a score in there. That's what's interesting to me. Because they got this tight end. Mm-hmm. Okay. They got Conley, who's a big guy, you know. Hill is a guy, he's the joker. They can move him around. But if you take Conley away, or excuse me, Kelce away,
yeah.
Who do you throw to in the red zone? See, and no one says that, but Alex Smith is going, well, who do I throw the ball to here? Because there's nobody here that basically can jump up and catch it.
Yeah, just go win a jump ball.
Right.
Right.
So all of a sudden, the percentage of that going, no, I'm taking the profit. I'm dumping it off. I'm not chancing turning this ball over because I'll take three before I throw interception. So, you know, we can blame it all on him. But I'm like, hey, when you take Kelce away, what big – Conley, yeah, he's big, but do you trust him all the time?
Do teams really take Kelce away or do they not throw him the ball? Probably a little bit of both, right?
Well, he had 117 targets.
But not in the end zone.
Well, a lot of reasons for that because that's where guys are leaning. They're going to lean that way and say, hey, man, make them beat you with Hill.
There's so much here. There's so much in that clip. There's so much I can't deal with. First of all, the idea that Alex Smith's the guy who takes the profit, Herm says, I'll take the profit. What year is it? When's the last time that worked? When's the last time that was even in a league championship game, much less any Super Bowl, much less winning a Super Bowl? Go start Googling it. Just Google away. Come back to me whenever you have the answer to that. Hasn't been recent. Maybe it's Joe Flacco, maybe. But Joe Flacco was not an I'll take the profit kind of guy. He was just young and cheap. He had a big arm. But that defense was just really, really good. You know what it was? Honestly, the last time that team was in the Super Bowl was Rex Grossman's Bears. which lost to Peyton Manning's Colts. I can't think of anything more recent than that. And you're in the and now that team right now would not survive. I guess I had young Matt Forte then, right? Young Matt Forte, Rex Grossman, and a really, really good defense. That team in the NFC North right now, that team wins 8 games. It's not going to work. It's just not going to work. So there's that. I don't know if Herm knows what year it is. Then he goes on to say that somehow Alex Smith's problem is maybe that he doesn't have enough weapons, especially in the red zone. Talking about the red zone specifically in that clip. In a second, he talks about Tyreek Hill in a larger sense, and I want to pull my teeth out and swallow them and let them just destroy my body until I die. A little extreme. It's upsetting, though. But so the idea that Alex Smith has not had enough weapons kills me. Because last year he had a Rookie of the Year contender, and he had Jeremy Maclin for part of the year, and Chris Conley and Tyreek Hill, and he has fewer weapons this year. Good luck. He's had years with Jeremy Maclin and Jamaal Charles in the backfield, relatively healthy. I mean, not recently for Charles, but he's had weapons. He's had pretty good offenses around him. He's also had maybe the best offensive mind in football, coaching it all up. And I'll tell you who doesn't believe that his problem is the weapons. The Kansas City Chiefs. Because, man, they could have traded up to 10 this year and gotten just about any weapon they wanted, right? Maybe they trade up higher. Because you know what? Alex Smith can win Super Bowls if we go get the best wide receiver in this draft. And also maybe don't cut one of our best receivers. A guy who's going to have his snaps replaced by Albert Wilson in the slot this year. But then, okay, next point from what Herm said, he said if you take Kelce away, who's going to get you anything in the end zone? When's that going to happen? First of all, take Rob Gronkowski away. Who's catching those end zone, red zone passes for the Patriots? They find somebody, because covering a tight end who's made of brick, who's made of a 10-foot tall brick tower, that opens up other guys. It has to. And if it doesn't, and if Kelce is being able to be eliminated by one guy, or even by simply a linebacker and a safety, then it's your quarterback's fault for not getting the ball to him anyway. But beyond that, past that point, if you don't trust Chris Conley in the end zone, somebody should have told John Dorsey before he cut Jeremy Maclin. And then they got, you know, tight ends and whatever to throw the ball to. But how this also somehow became an indictment on Tyreek Hill is really bizarre to me. That, like, and we'll just hear it in a second. Where Herm Edwards is convinced that he calls Tyreek Hill like a gadget player. He called him a joker in that clip. And no, I guess that Tyreek Hill isn't. He's not Calvin Johnson in the end zone. You're right. But to act like you don't have to account for him in the red zone or leading up like within 5 yards of the end zone or whatever is insane. Because whenever Tyreek Hill goes in motion, everybody is watching him. And with all of that being said, Alex Smith has to be able to find Kelce or Conley or Demetrius Harris or whatever. But so there's all of that of Herm on Alex Smith, a ton of stuff that I just cannot wrap my head around fully. But then Herm Edwards talked about Tyreek Hill.
They're going to lean that way and say, hey, man, make him beat you with Hill. Hill can beat you sideways and in the seam. Yeah, but vertically, you can't find him. He's little.
He's more of a beat you from distance.
Yes.
And I get it. Close range, you need a bigger, more physical wide receiver.
And you look at our league, that's what it is. Because when the field shrinks, and I say this as an old defensive coach and a defensive player, the odds of the defense are better because there's no vertical threat. The only threat you have is of a guy that can jump now.
Right.
And this is why you see defenses all of a sudden, they're bigger. They're getting bigger corners because the jump ball, you know, the back shoulder throw was not a part of football when I was in the league. It's a part of football now.
Yeah.
And so you got to get bigger guys. So you look at secondaries now, they're getting taller. Why? Because the ball is being played up here like basketball anymore.
Right.
You know? And so if you don't have a couple of those guys,
What does a quarterback find a guy to throw to?
All right. So at one point in there, I think Sorin sort of saved Herm from sounding even more ridiculous because he brought it back to the idea of the red zone. And again, I understand Tyreek Hill's height is a problem in the red zone because you'd rather have Calvin Johnson in the red zone. But Antonio Brown doesn't have any trouble getting open in the end zone. DeSean Jackson is not a red zone liability. These guys are the same height. Tyreek Hill's just faster. So that's silly. But has some point to it. But again, if you're just trying to deal with the red zone, just that's when you run out Ross Travis and Demetrius Harris. Because if you're just looking for big bodies, you can get big bodies pretty cheap if you're going to use them four times a game and hope they all are touchdowns. But Herm says, you know, he says the back shoulder throw is not a part of football when I was in the league. Which makes me wonder why he's using that as an indictment on the current state of the league. Something that should be a big part of any offense that I'm sure Andy Reid, and I've seen Andy Reid use it constantly. Like, partially, that plays into why Herm is coaching, right? Why Herm's not coaching, why Herm's on ESPN. Because he just wants 6-8 receivers, which good luck getting down there. The other thing, though, is we're talking about jump balls. And he talks about the field shrinking and everything. And that's in the red zone, which is such a bizarrely small thing to focus in on. But whenever he said towards the beginning, talked about Hill can't go deep because you can't find him. Man, if Alex Smith had the arm strength to throw the ball to where Tyreek Hill was going instead of to where he's been already, there wouldn't be a jump ball in your average offense. Andy Reid's offense doesn't let the field shrink until you get down to the red zone, in which case I'm not that worried about it. Now, Alex Smith has been bad in the red zone as a quarterback at finding guys to throw the ball to. But with last year, Kelce, Conley, Macklin, Hill as your weapons, there are, and whatever, Demetrius Harris, that's not on them. And if it is on them, then literally every team is screwed. Unless you have Amari Cooper, you're just bleeped. Who is the red zone threat for the Steelers? It's Antonio Brown, man. He's catching touchdowns. Antonio Brown catches touchdowns. I just think Herm sounds like a caveman. Whenever we come back, we'll either talk to Seth Kaiser or we'll talk more Chiefs. I'm going to have to convene with Charlie because we live in a world ruled by math, which is unfair. Math in general is unfair.
This is Sports Saturday.
It's so sexy to have assets. And yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, you're an assets man. I get it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You think assets think are sexy? It.
What's the most exciting part about having the number one overall pick? It's that
big fat asset
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's nobody so great. For me.
Yeah. Oh God! Welcome back to the show. Remember how earlier I said that like this Patrick Mahomes potentially starting this year thing was going to be like the story that we're just throwing around in kind of a dead time. The show currently, I believe, on ESPN Radio right now, which you could if you want to hear this instead of this show, you can go right now. You can leave and go find the ESPN app. This is what they're talking about currently. You are the Houston Rockets. Your house is on fire. Only time to save one. James Harden, Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, or Chris Paul. Okay. Okay, fine. I'm probably going to go ahead and talk about Patrick Mahomes instead. Because, God, that's more interesting to me. Also, Charlie and I did the math during the break. Good job, us. You can't tell my college algebra teacher nothing. We have made it. We've somehow gone a few consecutive weeks without talking to Seth Kizer over on Arrowhead Pride at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. And I guess it's because we had some baseball to talk about and maybe football took a back seat for a little bit, but nothing brings football season back to the front burner other than real football quite like the All-Star break. So Seth came up with a good handful of topics to break down in this sort of dead time in sports as baseball picks back up. Now I'm going to have a hard time focusing on the Royals because the Chiefs are just out of arm's reach. Seth, as always, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh. Always fun.
We've got three major things to talk about here today. We can do them in any order and for any length of time, although I've been informed that your wife has said that this needs to be like 20 minutes or below. Otherwise, I'm not going to say there are going to be going to be divorce papers, but there might be like, I don't know, couch dismissal. And I don't want you to.
Yeah, couch dismissal, a 2x4 across the back of the head, something like that.
Well, that's,
either way, I'm scared.
that's definitely domestic violence. And since we're talking about the Chiefs, that'll be a pretty easy transition so we can get there fourth if we have extra time left over. oh, God, is that too soon? I don't know. We'll figure it out. All right, well, what we'll do first then through these three things, we want to talk about the story that sort of bubbled up to the surface with Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith, that nothing really changed other than our need for a good new topic. Then you did a film review on Chris Conley, and you also wrote a story about the Raiders and their status, possibly unearned, as an offensive juggernaut. Let's go ahead and start, though, with the quarterback situation, because that's been sort of the story of the week. Your podcast, first of all, how do people find your podcast?
You can find my podcast. It's just the Minnesota Chiefs Fan Podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Block Talk Radio. I'm not sure if we're on Google Play yet. We're in a couple other places, but iTunes is the first place to look, or Block Talk Radio. You can find it, the Minnesota Chiefs Fan Podcast.
So, and that's also new since the last time we had you on. So maybe I can try to keep enticing you back to bring that to a new audience. Eventually, though, you're going to just overtake me entirely.
We'll see what happens. The production value is quite low. So.
Well, that's where every podcast starts, I promise.
There it is.
So you were talking on the podcast about some of the arguments against moving to Mahomes sooner rather than later and why some of that math doesn't really add up. What were you unpacking there?
Well, here's the long and short of it. There are a few reasons why people give that Patrick Mahomes absolutely, no matter what, is absolutely no way that he should start this year. Mm-hmm. Some of those reasons are good. Some of them are not. You know, so let me say all of this with a caveat that if Patrick Mahomes isn't mentally ready, then obviously he shouldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I would say, though, with regards to Patrick Mahomes. One thing that people say, well, his footwork needs to be entirely revamped before he can possibly play because his footwork was so bad in college, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I've talked about this, I think, with you a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that Patrick Mahomes' footwork needs to be completely revamped is ridiculous. It is. It's just simply not accurate. And the reason for this is pretty simple. What he needs to learn footwork-wise is taking drops properly, you know, 1-2-3 throw, 1-2-3-4-5 throw, because the timing of Andy Reid's offense, you know, everything's predicated on timing, right? And so that depends on the timing of your drop back and your receiver's routes. So that he has to get down. Frankly, you know, to mix metaphors, that's not rocket surgery.
Right.
That's something that can be done with reps, and that's something that can be done with reps in your off time and in practice, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that people talk about with regards to his throwing motion, that he won't be able to be accurate consistently, it's blatantly ignoring the fact that on film, and I went back, I charted every single throw for him and for multiple other quarterbacks in this draft, and besides Deshaun Watson, he was the most accurate quarterback consistently, and it wasn't that far of a distance between him and Watson.
Mm-hmm.
So people say, oh, well, he won't be accurate, except he is accurate. And then people say, and the argument always goes the same way. And then people say, well, that's college. This is the pros. Well, that would make sense, except I grade accurate and inaccurate throws exactly the same for pros as I do in college.
Hmm.
So it's not like if a throw is 3 feet farther off, I say, oh, well, it's college. So that's college accurate.
Right.
No, a throw is either accurate or it's not. So regardless of whether you're playing in the pros or in college, an accurate throw is an accurate throw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that his accuracy will be bad, it just doesn't match what's on film. Additionally, If you think about NFL quarterbacks, one of the guys with some of the worst footwork in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. He doesn't need to have a stable platform when he throws because he's got more arm talent than everyone else. And so what happens is when someone doesn't have correct footwork, someone with a weak arm, they have to put more into it when they throw, and they lose accuracy. You know, when you try to overthrow something a little mm-hmm. bit harder with just your arm, mm-hmm. you lose accuracy. Patrick Mahomes and guys like Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, they don't have to do that because they've got so much arm talent that they can throw it accurately, and they can put enough power into it without having to overthrow. Does all that make sense so far?
Everything so far so good. I think I've got it.
And so that's the first thing, the footwork thing, it just doesn't add up. It just doesn't.
Right.
The second thing, you know, it's going to take him years to learn Andy Reid's complicated offense. It's worth noting, Mike Vick, who is not known for being a particularly adept student of the game,
mm-hmm.
he's a guy who succeeded on physical talent.
Yeah.
And he would admit that.
Yeah.
He came in and he ran Andy Reid's offense very well. How could that possibly happen if it requires some kind of genius? No one's ever claimed that Donovan McNabb was some kind of football savant.
Right.
Right? So here's the long and short of it. Does Andy Reid's offense require the ability to read coverages pre-snap? Yes, it does. Guess what Patrick Mahomes did in college? He read defenses pre-snap. He was given, if you believe him, if you believe his coach, he was given full authority at the line of scrimmage to check in and out of various plays and hot routes based on the coverages he saw. So this idea that he has no experience doing that, that's, again, just wrong. Is it harder in the pros? Yes, because they disguise things more. But that's the same for literally every other college quarterback that's coming in. So to act like he's some kind of special case is, again, it just is wrong. You know, me, attorney by day, I care about what the evidence shows me.
Right.
And the evidence is that he's done this more than a lot of college quarterbacks. So that reason doesn't make sense either. And since we're talking about Andy Reid's offense, one thing I think people, and this is the most important thing, one thing I think people are leaving out when they think about how Mahomes would do in this offense, they think the offense would be identical to what Alex Smith currently runs.
Right.
But it wouldn't. Again, Andy Reid has had a Donovan McNabb, and he's had a Mike Vick, and he's had a Kolb, and he's had an Alex Smith, and he's had different players. And he's always adapted his offense with the same basic principles, but he's molded it around the strengths and weaknesses of his quarterback. And I would argue no coach is better at molding his offense around his quarterback's strengths and weaknesses. Mm. And so I trust Andy Reid to say, okay, I've got this rookie in, if this is the route they go, which I, for the record, I don't think Andy Reid will do this. I'm saying why he could. So Andy Reid can say, okay, this is my rookie. There's a few things he does well. There's a few things he doesn't do as well. And he would mold his offense around the things that Mahomes does well, which is read the field post-snap, go through progressions well, fit the ball into tight corners, find open receivers. He moves well inside and outside the pocket. You can build an offense around those strengths. And I guess I will take 50% of an Andy Reid offense run by Patrick Mahomes if it means by the end of the season you're seeing 80%.
Right.
Of an Andy Reid offense run by Patrick right. Mahomes. So what my big overall point is that there's just these reasons for not starting him, they just don't make sense. The final thing that you hear most often is, well, we don't want to ruin him, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to pull a David Carr.
Right.
Well, what happened to David Carr was that he was playing behind the worst offensive line anyone had ever seen, and he got just killed. And that's not the case here. You've got a pretty competent offensive line that's going to be going into a second year of continuity with everyone together. You've got an offense that's built to protect the quarterback, because Andy Reid does that. A Pro Football Focus just posted, you know, the least amount of pressures allowed by the offensive line last year, the Oakland Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs tied.
Yep. Yep.
And that's not because the Chiefs have the greatest offensive line, but because the offense protects them. And the same thing would be true. So he's not going to get ruined that way. He also has one of the best safety nets in the NFL in Travis Kelce, who's constantly open. If you go back and watch the All-22 film, he could have been targeted 200 times last year, easily. So he's got that. He also has a player who happens to fit exactly what he does best in Tyreek Hill. There are very few things that make a defense have to scramble than a guy that forces a safety to play over the top constantly. And Tyreek Hill does that with Patrick Mahomes on the field. Because Patrick Mahomes can throw the ball 65, 70 yards, and no one can keep up with Tyreek Hill for that long. And so this idea that he would be ruined, I guess, why?
Right.
He's not being thrown to the wolves like David Carr was, where they had a crap defense and where they had just a horrible offense. The defense got better, but the offense stayed horrible. He's not going to get beat up. He's not going to have to throw five touchdowns a game and take risks and learn to throw interceptions. He'll be in a better situation than he was in college. And if college didn't wreck him, why would being in a good situation with the Chiefs wreck him? So there, that's a lot. And now I can take a breath.
Yeah, feel free to breathe for a second while I also catch my breath, because the idea of Patrick Mahomes with all of those things around him, with all of these advantages and all of these reasons that he will not be wrecked in the offense, or all of the reasons that he doesn't make sense on this team this year, with all of that to the side, now I am also the breathless one, because fantasizing that is just a much more interesting way to live our 2017 NFL season. Because I'm pretty sure we all know what the offense is going to look like with Alex Smith. Maybe he's a little more freewheeling because he feels the breath on the back of his neck, but he's probably felt that breath for the last 2 years. So,
probably.
Oh God, I just want it.
Yeah, and that's, I feel bad because I'm making people want this. And again, I don't think Andy Reid will do it. But if they start going through training camp and Mahomes shows a decent amount of ability in the preseason games, why wait? You know this is the guy you're going to long term. The best way to learn is by doing.
One more thing that people have used as a reason, kind of going in that direction, I think where you might be headed, is it, well, and Andy Reid's not going to screw over Alex Smith like that. He's been very loyal to Alex Smith. He's been very vocal about Alex Smith being his quarterback. And that, for as long as Alex Smith and Andy Reid have been in Kansas City, what have Andy Reid's better options been? Nick Foles and Chase Daniel?
And then also, the next time someone says Andy Reid would never do that to a player he likes, let's call Jeremy Maclin and see what he thinks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because Andy Reid likes Jeremy Maclin, by all accounts, more than Alex Smith.
Sure.
And he didn't seem happy about it, but the move got made. Andy Reid is a guy who's about winning. He is.
Yes.
And so I just don't see that as a reason. Now, look, I like Alex Smith. He seems like a really decent guy. He's got a great foundation. I am so glad they traded for him. Mm-hmm. He stabilized the quarterback position when it needed to happen.
Sure.
He's done a lot for the team.
Sure.
But if Mahomes is your plan for the future, if you don't think he's going to crap the bed out there, mm-hmm. you put him out there.
Yep.
Because then you're starting things off now, as opposed to next year. Then what? They probably let Alex Smith go at that point. And
have
so
to.
Now you don't even have a safety net there.
Right. Right. Well, Herm Edwards.
Yeah, well, now we'll see what we have.
Herm Edwards said this week to Sarin on the program, he said he doesn't think Patrick Mahomes is going to be ready 2 years from now, which I think is patently absurd. But also, you would think that Herm Edwards knows more about football than I do, but maybe I'll have to fight him on that. I don't know. We'll see.
Considering the moves he made at quarterback, I don't know
that's a good point.
Oh, yeah, quarterback savant, that guy.
That's a good point. All right, listen, Seth. I'm talking to Seth Kaiser. He's at RealMN Chiefs Fan on Twitter. He writes for Arrowhead Pride. He has a podcast now. Just search for Minnesota Chiefs Fan podcast. We're going to have to get through this Conley and Raiders thing real quick. Otherwise, we're going to have a domestic dispute on our hands.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what you learned. You did a film breakdown of Chris Conley. Tell me in a macro sense, what were your takeaways from that breakdown?
My takeaways from that breakdown is he's not the hope for him was maybe always that he'd be like a poor man's AJ Green, a lanky, tall guy with long arms that can go up, get a jump ball, get separation.
Yeah.
What I found with film review, he bulked up his second year. He didn't look quick on film. He still got a little bit of deep speed, but he looks strong, very strong, actually. He handled press coverage significantly better. And so if I were to sum it up to one sentence, Chris Conley kind of resembles Dwayne Bowe in the way he plays at this point.
So great. I saw you tweet that, and it's great.
Bowe had all the talent in the world.
Oh, yeah, I love Dwayne Bowe. Love Dwayne Bowe.
And so we'll see, because he's also a more consistent hands catcher than Bo ever was. Bo mm-hmm. wasn't great with that except for the spectacular catches.
Right.
So that's the ceiling for Chris Conley after watching his film. I don't think he's elite NFL wide receiver. He's just too limited in his routes because of a lack of quickness. But with how physical he is and how sure-handed he is, he made some great contested catches. good concentration, strong hands. I think his ceiling might be a Dwayne Bowe type possession receiver with better hands and a little more deep speed. And I got to tell you, if he hits that ceiling, I don't think there's a single Chiefs fan who wouldn't take that.
Sure. Yeah. I would be a lot more excited if I envisioned him doing that beside like Jeremy Maclin in the slot. Instead of beside Albert Wilson or D'Anthony Thomas in the slot, I'm not quite as thrilled about like poor man's Dwayne Bowe or maybe just Dwayne Bowe in the offense as it is currently constituted. But
right, and that's the problem. If you remember, you know, Dwayne Bowe wasn't able to produce much in the current offense.
Yeah.
And the problem is his primary strength is contested catches. And so how many of those are you going to get with Alex Smith? The winning at the catch point, that's just not his thing, and that's fine. That's what Alex does. He is who he is. He doesn't take those risks, and that's a good thing a lot of the time. But if that's Conley's primary strength, then he's not great at getting separation, and he's not. So, again, when I say that's his ceiling, he's not there yet. He was a passable, decent possession receiver last year. But how much is he going to be able to improve on that with the way the offense currently is, I don't know.
And if he stays, if he just repeats last year but with more targets by necessity, and he's the third weapon in the offense, in the passing offense, maybe the fourth weapon if you consider Kareem Hunt or Spencer Ware, maybe just all the running backs together as the fourth, yeah. third or fourth weapon. What does the offense look like if Chris Conley doesn't take a Dwayne Bowe step forward?
Well, you know, there's just so many other variables there. Mm-hmm. I think if Conley is who he is last year, he's still, again, he's a passable guy. He's a decent player. You can get away with having him on the field, and he can be counted on. If he doesn't take another step forward, I will be concerned about the offense just because, you know, look, Kelsey's a freak, one of the best at his position in the NFL, one of the best receivers in the NFL, period. But Tyreek Hill's unproven in a larger sample size, and it'll concern me if Conley doesn't take a step forward, that the offense is going to stay pretty much exactly where it was at last year, which was, you know, very average, not good enough to get it done.
So this is now going from, we're going up and down very quickly here as far as our viewpoints on the Chiefs offense, I think. But I'm now wondering if you have this be another year of an Alex Smith offense, where you essentially replace injured Jamaal Charles with Kareem Hunt, and you replace Jeremy Maclin with like Jehu Chesson, I guess. What reason is there to expect the offense to take a step forward whenever it becomes pretty undeniably less talented? Maybe you expect a step up from Tyreek Hill just from being in the offense more.
Right. I would say, again, you know, with the Tyreek Hill thing, I think you hit the nail on the head. Having him get more touches is going to make the offense more explosive, almost certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Expanding his role. Everything they threw at him last year when they started giving him more traditional wide receiver routes, he looked good doing it. And so that alone could make the offense better than it was last year. In fact, I think it will, just based on his ability alone. Another thing, you know, no one likes to really count on progression and, you know, chemistry and that kind of stuff, but on the offensive line it matters. The offensive line will have been together for a few years now.
Right.
I think that's going to help.
Okay.
And Kareem Hunt, I mean, you and I have talked about him. I really like Kareem Hunt.
I do too, yeah.
And with him on board, if he plays up to what I think he can maybe do, that might help keep Spencer Ware healthy. And I think a lot of fans forget, because down the stretch he kept getting nicked up and he just wasn't quite himself. He was a beast to start off the year. He was so good. When I went back to review the offense,
mm-hmm.
you know, the first like 6 or 7 games, I was stunned because I'd forgotten how good Spencer Ware played. And so maybe if Hunt can shoulder a little more of the burden, or if West can stay a little bit healthier, you know, you might see those natural improvements. But honestly, like you said, it seems like we maybe have seen the ceiling of what the offense can do, unless Alex, because it's all going to rise and fall on Alex, unless Tyreek Hill becomes a full-blown superstar.
Yeah.
Or Conley takes another giant step, because Conley was significantly better his second year than he was his rookie year. So maybe if he takes another giant step forward, those things could happen, but it's tough to count on those things. And so I don't anticipate the offense being significantly better than it was last year. Because, again, you lose Maclin. And did Maclin contribute a ton last year? No, but he contributed some.
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of hoping that players develop, which sometimes it happens, like with Travis Kelce, and it's great. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Like, you know, we always kept expecting Dexter McCluster to turn into this great slot receiver, and it just never happened. So we'll see, but I think where they're standing right now, we're looking at an offense that's fairly similar to last year's. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're going to be. And I also am thinking now about how much more excited I would be about the offense taking a step forward with Patrick Mahomes, even if it means more big mistakes. I can live with that. That's a reality I'm going to be comfortable living in whenever that eventually happens.
Right.
Real quick then, and I have two more very quick Patrick Mahomes questions that we'll save for the very end here today. But you wrote this piece on the Raiders offense and why they're considered an offensive juggernaut, or asking why they're considered an offensive juggernaut. Despite all their flaws, and you can read that over at Arrowhead Pride. go ahead and give us a breakdown of what that was about.
Here's the long and short of it. All offseason, I've heard about how the Raiders have an already great offense, have added more weapons to take this next level to just insane. Leaving out Patterson, Cook, and Lynch, who, I mean, they might do great, they might not. I don't know. But I keep hearing the Raiders offense talk about like it was this great offense last year, but when you really go back and look at things, they barely averaged more points per game than a decisively mediocre Chiefs offense.
Right.
And then if you really look at things, Football Outsiders allows you to look at things on a per drive basis rather than on like a points per game and that kind of thing. And something interesting happens there on a per drive basis. The Raiders were pretty much middle of the pack in yards gained per drive, in points per drive. I think they were like 19th in the league. They, on a per drive basis, they weren't that good. They hovered around the same areas as the Chiefs in most of these areas. And so I thought, man, that doesn't make sense because, you know, their average is the points per game, yards per game. Well, then when you start to look up, one thing they have is number of offensive drives. The Raiders had 12 more drives than the average NFL team last year. And you might think, well, that's not that big a deal. That's the equivalent of more than a full game of offensive stats that they packed on because their defense was so terrible, right?
Yeah.
And so they had all these extra drives. So imagine, you know, if they're averaging 24 points or so a game, imagine tacking on 24 points to your average, an extra 400 yards to your average. And that cranks you up, you know, a point and a half, 2 points. If you take away those extra drives, they had 19 more drives than the Chiefs, by the way. If you take away those extra drives, they are like dead center middle of the league in yards, in points, and all those things. And so, look, could they be a great offense? Absolutely. Just the sum of their parts hasn't quite added up yet. Derek Carr is a good young quarterback. They've got good receivers, good offensive line. But you know what? Their head coach, he's not a good offensive coach, at least from what we've seen.
Right, yeah.
And that's important. And so far, my only point was, hey, maybe they'll be great this year. But everyone's crowning them like they were great last year, and they were the Chiefs. They were the Chiefs offense, and yet somehow people think they were great. And I think that's because people get so hung up looking at names on the back of jerseys, but they don't look at actual production.
That's really interesting. All right, we're over 20 minutes, so please tell Mrs. Minnesota Chiefs fan that I apologize deeply. But also,
I'll let her know.
Also, it's really your fault. I mean, you just have you're long-winded. You have long, good answers.
I have a lot to say.
It's just, I think that's an okay thing. I'm happy to have you here, but I guess it probably... probably leaves her just beside herself with rage.
When I show up at your house tonight, and get someone to sleep. Then you'll know.
we have a couple of great couches. You are welcome anytime.
There we go.
The commute is going to be killer, though.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough 9 hours.
But last two questions back to back, and they're so absolute and they're so unnuanced, and I'm so sorry. But what's the percent chance that Patrick Mahomes is starting week one in 2018? Not 17, 18.
In 2018?
Yes.
99%.
I agree completely. I guess we both think that Herm Edwards is a dope. I guess that's what we just did. What about day one, week one, 2017?
I'd say more like 10-15%.
All right, what's the chance that he's named the starter at some point during the 2017 season?
I would put it at, barring the injury, I would put it at the same. I don't think Andy Reid's going to make the switch mid-year. Maybe raise it up a couple percentage points.
Seth Kaiser, at RealMN Chiefs Fan on Twitter. You can find his podcast. Just Google Minnesota Chiefs Fan podcast and read us up at Arrowhead Pride. Enjoy the couch tonight. I apologize again, but only a little bit.
Don't worry about it. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Top shelf Chiefs talk, witty banter, the cause of domestic disputes, Sports Sunday has it all.